What are the sources and origins of writings like the Book of Mormon, the Quran, and the Gospel of Thomas, and how do they compare to the Bible? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is One Word, Many Writings, a study of the origins of religious writings. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org, or you can find out more about One Word, Many Writings by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. One Word, Many Writings by Dr. Adam Francisco.
Hey, preacher man, give me the gospel. Tell me of the God-man who bore all the blame. Hey, preacher man, give me the gospel. When you preach the gospel, you shouldn't be ashamed.
One of the reasons, perhaps the main reason, I think, that we do sermon reviews here on Issues, etc., people often misunderstand. They think that we do sermon reviews to pick at or poke fun at popular preachers or preachers that we happen to disagree with. That's not really the reason. That's why we do both sermon reviews of good sermons and bad sermons. And when we do the reviews of the bad sermons, we're trying to tune your ears to listen for something that the Bible says you need to hear. You need to hear on a regular basis. How often does the Bible talk about the preaching of the gospel, that is the good news of Jesus Christ? And it doesn't present it as something that only needs to be preached at the evangelism rally or the big evangelism Sunday, but something that Christians need and unbelievers need to hear every single Sunday, every single sermon. That's what we talk about, sermons being Christ-centered and cross-focused. Now, the problem is, many people's ears have been tuned to listen for something else. And when that is missing, when Jesus is missing, when the cross is missing, when the forgiveness of sins through Jesus' sacrifice on the cross is missing, they don't miss it. It's not their fault. It's because they've been taught to listen for something else. What have they been taught to listen for? An engaging preacher, someone they don't disagree with, someone who makes them laugh, entertains them, gives them a little insight or thought, or advice to live their life throughout the rest of the week. That's what they've been taught to listen for. It's not their fault. They've been trained by, I would say, consistently bad, poor, and substandard preaching not to listen for the one thing they need most of all, and that is the preaching of Christ and his cross for sinners. That's why our sermon diagnostic, when we review sermons, good, bad, and ugly, remains the same. There's no double standard here. It is, how often is Jesus mentioned? In order for Christ and him crucified to be preached, Jesus needs to be mentioned, and not just honorable mention, not just an occasional mention of his name, and most certainly, and this applies in the sermon review coming up here, most certainly not just generic references to God. If a Mormon can hear your pastor's sermon and find absolutely nothing offensive in it, your pastor isn't preaching Christ in his saving work. And I bet you, dollars to donuts, your pastor is preaching about a generic God rather than mentioning Christ himself as Scripture mentions him. So the first part of the diagnostic, following the very requirements of Scripture, Paul himself, preacher par excellence, the best evangelist ever to have ever lived, says, I was determined to know nothing among you except Christ and him crucified. That was not only the summary, but the substance of Paul's preaching, day in, day out, Sunday in, Sunday out. Now, you listen for Jesus. How often is he mentioned? And if Jesus is mentioned often, not just a few times, not just enough times, but if Jesus is all over the sermon, as he should be, because after all, we're preaching Christ, aren't we? Then you can go on to the second part of the diagnostic, which is Jesus the subject of the verbs? And that's a simple way of ferreting out and holding the preacher accountable for how he talks about Jesus. Is Jesus the guy you love, or is he the one who loves you? Is Jesus the one you serve, or is he the one who serves you? As he says, I came not to be served, but serve and give my life as a ransom for many. You see the difference there? In one case, you are the subject of the verbs. That doesn't do you a lot of good, does it? And in the other case, Jesus is the subject of the verbs, and he's presented in clear tones as your Savior. So how often is Jesus mentioned? Is Jesus the subject of the verbs? And then we got to be even more careful. That is, What are those verbs? That's the third part of the diagnostic. What are the verbs? Is this the Jesus who inspires and motivates? You're going to hear a lot of that in this sermon. The Jesus who inspires and motivates and gives you rules for living and formulas to follow? Or is this the Jesus as the New Testament presents him? The verbs are very particular, aren't they? They're very peculiar. This is a Jesus who lives and suffers and bleeds and dies for sinners like you and me. So that's the three-part diagnostic. With that in hand, I don't know what the text of this sermon is, because sometimes these sermons don't have Bible texts. He's going to present a sermon. It's Dr. Henry Cloud at Willow Creek Community Church, the guest preacher there under Bill Hybels. He's going to present a sermon on stages of faith. Let's see. How often is Jesus mentioned? Is Jesus the subject of the verbs? And if so, what are those verbs?
This is going to be, it is a little theoretical, what we're going to talk about. And what I mean by theoretical, it's conceptual. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a map. And it is a map of something that we call stages of faith. And here's how it goes. In stages of faith, you know, like in any other growth, the Bible says that we start out, you know, we're born again. That means that we're totally new in the faith. And then what happens is we go through this process. And just like developmental stages in a person happen, that happens with us in the stages of faith. So what we're going to do is we're going to walk through these, and there's four of them, and I'm just going to hop right into it. Okay, stage number one. Some of you will find yourself here in this one. All of us have been here because this is where life starts. Stage one is the stage that I'll call non-faith. Non-faith, what that means is that when all of us are born, we just sort of show up. We don't know how we got here, and we start to negotiate life. And we start to kind of figure out life, and we start to think, well, this is the way I want to do this, and this is what I want to be. And we go down these paths. And basically, in non-faith, we are God.
Now, I only have one question here. And now Willow Creek is just absolutely famous for this, inventing new terms to substitute for biblical terms. They love to do this. So instead of sinners, you have seekers. That's an invention of Willow Creek and the congregations that follow it. So instead of sinners, the word the Bible uses, you got seekers. And instead of Christians, their term now, I guess the latest emanation of this term is a fully devoted Christ follower, which has more adjectives than nouns in it. Then, in this case, instead of unbelievers or unbelief, here's a new one, non-faith. Maybe it's like, what shall we say? I mean, I don't know how much more awkward you could get than that. Whereas the Bible will talk about unbelievers, those outside the faith, here's a new term, non-faith. It's, well, it's not offensive, isn't it? It's not that you are an unbeliever. It's just that you are not, you just don't have faith. Almost kind of seems to presume that the natural state of man is to have faith, but he's got to kind of mature enough to figure it out. And I don't understand at this point, maybe I will as I listen more, why the stages of faith, the first stages of faith is non-faith. That's like saying the first stage of life is non-life. Which isn't true. The first stage of life must be the beginning of life, but for some reason he wants the first stage of faith to be non-faith. Now, is he right that unbelievers essentially believe themselves to be God? Sure they do. Sure they do. I don't see how that's a stage of faith. Seems to be more a stage of unbelief.
I mean, you might not wake up in the morning and go to the mirror and worship yourself. I live in L.A. People do that there, actually, not in Chicago. And so I don't mean so much self-worship as the big thing here is self-rule. Self-rule. Basically meaning we kind of answer to ourselves and we figure out what I want to do with my life, and we figure out the ways that I want to do this and this and this and this. And, you know, sometimes for many people, a lot of life goes very well, but what happens is you hit a crisis. Now, there's a lot of different kinds of crises that kind of launch us, you know, into this shaky ground in stage one. Some of them don't even mean that life is going bad. Some very successful people will hit a crisis of meaning. A crisis of meaning. And they'll feel all these blessings and all this success. Maybe their career has gone really well and they have a wonderful family and everything is great. And then they sit out at night and they look up and they wonder, is this it? I mean, have I gotten to the sort of pinnacle and this is all there is in life? Or they wonder if there's anybody that gave them all these blessings. Bill and I were having dinner one night in a restaurant near here. And we got to the end of the dinner, and the server came over, and we asked for the check. And the server says, well, there won't be a check. And we said, why? And he said, someone took care of your dinner. And they just said, hope you enjoy it, appreciate what you do, and they paid for it. We said, who was it? And he said, I don't know. He just paid for it and left. And it was an incredible blessing. And at first we're like, that is really nice. But then, you know what happened moments after that? So we both had this experience of who do we thank?
We'll pick up on the other side of the break. I'm not sure what he's trying to illustrate there. I guess he's trying to illustrate that people in non-faith, his term, have all these blessings, but they don't know who to thank. Now, already we see this is going to shape up to be an example of what I often call preaching the Christian, not the Christ. This is going to be a sermon that's about you and your stages of faith and your development and your progress rather than Jesus. It's not a sermon that really requires Jesus. And if it's not a sermon that requires Jesus, it's hard to say how you could call it a Christian sermon. Also notice this kind of preaching, this kind of preaching the Christian is obsessed with process and stages and steps and levels. We'll be right back.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Preaching Christ and Him crucified. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
It was the day after Christmas in 1538 when family and friends who were gathered around Luther's table heard him say, "There is no finer gift that a parent can give to a child than an education in the liberal arts." For over 100 years, St. Paul's Lutheran School in Brookfield, Illinois, has been emphasizing the six chief parts and the seven liberal arts, providing classical education in the Lutheran tradition. Visit our website at spbrookfield.org or call 708-485-0650.
Oh,
The hymn For All the Saints, sung by the Liverpool Cathedral Combined Choirs. It's playing right now at LutheranPublicRadio.org. There's no talk, just sacred music of the church 24/7 at LutheranPublicRadio.org. We're reviewing a sermon preached on Sunday at Willow Creek Community Church in South Barrington, Illinois, a sermon on the stages of faith preached by Dr. Henry Cloud. He's not the pastor there. He's a clinical psychologist with some best-selling books on leadership and practicing good habits of leadership. And Willow Creek likes to have people like this in to preach, to kind of share their wisdom, so to speak, with the congregation. So it's not unusual to find this here. But he does reflect something already in the sermon that I mentioned before the break that is very typical of Willow Creek's approach, and that is obsession. And I don't use that term in an exaggerated way. It is a bona fide obsession with process, with the process of becoming and being a Christian. Even Willow Creek itself has kind of codified Christianity into, I think, four or five different stages that you pass through that culminates in you being the pinnacle of all things, the fully devoted Christ follower. I guess you get your card at that point and can fly or leap tall buildings. I'm not sure. But they are obsessed with process. I have listened to many sermons from Bill Hybels, from the others there at Willow Creek, and this one's no exception. And basically, they all pretty much are there telling the people, now, these are the various stages that you're passing through. Now, when you hear a sermon like this, do you do what I do? I think you do. The stages of faith. The first thing when you hear that is, well, what stage am I in? Now, all of us, if there are four stages, we'll locate ourselves in the third or the fourth stage. Why? Because we don't want to say, well, I'm at the first stage of faith. That would be ridiculous. I've been a Christian for a while. The second stage is, well, that's for people who are still trying. The fourth stage would be, that'd be too arrogant to presume that I'm actually in the fourth stage of faith. I mean, only the preacher's in that stage. So I must be in the third or the fourth stages. But the question is automatically raised when you talk about stages or levels or steps of faith. First, you want to locate yourself in there. He's already described the first stage of faith as being non-faith. And he's going to go on to talk about the other three phases or stages of faith. Again, no Jesus necessary. This is the preaching of the Christian, not the Christ. And have you noticed how incredibly vague his terminology is? Not just vague in its general expression, but even with regard to God. It is the most general, vague, and generic God talk so far. I mean, one would hope, and we'll listen on, that he gets a little more specific than just talking about God or someone who sent the blessings or who really rules your life. Let's go back to the sermon.
Like, we got this blessing and this gift, and there was something, some way in which life is designed that we know that we've been given to, and part of the meaning of life is to be connected to where good things come from. And so sometimes even successful people hit this, what does it all mean? And sometimes we hit a crisis of wanting a purpose larger than ourselves that transcends my own kingdom and give ourselves to something larger than ourselves. And there's a lot of different crises in here, but another one is sometimes the way that we do it doesn't work and we hit chaos or hit bottom. The way that I came into a deeper experience of going from non-faith to both feet in was when I was in college. And I don't know if I've told you much of my story, but I'm going to share a little bit of it a few times today. What happened to me was I grew up and I had a God. My God was golf. And I grew up playing competitive golf and played a lot of golf tournaments all the time, and I traveled and did all that. And in high school, I got pretty successful at it, and I was winning a bunch of stuff. And then I started getting recruited by a lot of colleges, and ultimately went to one that was a really, really great golf school. And I had this future that I wanted to do somewhere in that game. And what happened was I had a hand injury, and right basically, when I started my college career, had a lot of pain, and I would play well and then not play well, and I couldn't hold on to the club, and I'd struggle for a couple of years. I went to a million doctors, and finally, at the end of a couple of years, I had to give it up. And my world, my dream, what I'd oriented my life around, went away. And I hit bottom. Had a breakup with a girlfriend right about the same time. I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And I was sitting there and every day, and if any of you have ever been depressed, some of you don't know what this is like. If I knew then what I knew now, I would have been in a hospital.
Now, he's about to tell he's leading up to it. Usually, you know, in this kind of preaching, there's got to be some sort of personal story. You got to tell your personal story because that's the most important story after all. Again, preaching the Christian rather than the Christ. Do you see why I say that? I'm not exaggerating when I say what gets preached is either you, the listener, or the preacher himself, but is preaching the Christian rather than the Christ. Now, he's about to tell the story of, I guess he'd call it conversion, although I'm pretty sure that Willow Creek has come up with a better term than conversion, or a better term than coming to faith, a better term than faith. Who knows? We'll see. But I want you to listen carefully. This is the point in the typical testimony where the person would stop talking about themselves and start talking specifically about who? Jesus. Yes. Let's see if he does.
And I'll just tell you, I was literally every day, I did not know how I was going to get up and go through that day. And this went on for months and months and months. Deeply, deeply depressed. But not only was I depressed, I didn't know a way out. I didn't know where to go from there. And so finally, I was at the end of myself. I was sitting in my dorm room one day, and I looked up on the shelf and I saw my Bible there that I'd taken it to college with me, but it wasn't top on my list. And I felt some sort of something that made me reach out, and I went over and I picked it up and I sat down and I was thinking about all these things, like how do you find what you're supposed to do in life, and how do you find a career, and how do you make a relationship work, and how do you find the girl, and how do you know, and worst of all, how am I going to feel better? I opened up the Bible, didn't know really where I was looking. Open it up, and you've heard the phrase, a verse jumped off the page. And that's what happened, and it was the verse in Matthew 6 that says, seek ye first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you as well. What that said to me was, maybe I've had it backwards. Maybe I've tried to kind of direct my life and get all the things in place, but I'm supposed to go to God first, and then he will guide me. And that's what it said. And so I said, well, I've tried everything. I'll try this. So I walked across campus. I went into this chapel. It was a cold winter day. And I walked down in the front, and I said, God, I don't know if you're there, but if you are, I need you. And I will give myself to you, and I'll do whatever you tell me. But I got to get out of this. I need help. I knew at that moment I had done something that I had never done. I knew that I had jumped out of the plane, and if the chute didn't open, I didn't know what I was going to do. Because, you know, everybody, I think, or a lot of people think, well, you know, there's a God out there, and maybe someday if I ever really get in trouble, I'll turn it into one of those nutcases. And I had a problem. Well, it wasn't so much God. God was cool. It was his friends that I thought were weird.
Okay, so there's a conversion story that held together beautifully with no Jesus, no cross, no forgiveness of sins. Just kind of, you know, my life fell apart. My golf career was at an end. My girlfriend broke up with me, or I broke up with her, whatever. And saw the Bible, randomly opened to a page. It stuck out to me. It said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Prime opportunity right there to talk about Jesus, don't you think? I mean, where is that righteousness? But that's not important, because he went to the chapel and he just said, God, generic God, oh, generic God, if you're out there someplace, I'll give you a chance to run my life. No Jesus. You know, I don't even know if there is conversion. without Jesus. I mean, what he described there was some kind of crisis of existential crisis to which a God might provide an answer or a better way than he had been trying, taking his life that he'd kind of messed up or kind of gotten messed up and improving it. But you don't need Jesus to hang dead on the cross to tell you what to do next or to help you build your relationships or to find the girl. You don't need Jesus hanging dead on the cross for you to, you know, stop what you're doing and find a new direction or a new purpose. I think that's the very first time I've ever heard a testimony. You know, we don't buy into testimonies because, again, we're about preaching Christ rather than the Christian. But even if you just hold them as an example of what's common in many Christian congregations, I think that's the very first time I've ever heard a quote-unquote Christian testimony with no Christ in it. I think it is. A generic God? Yes. A Bible passage that might have made reference to Jesus? Who knows? Well, we'll find out when we come back from this break in hour two of Issues, Etc. We're going to pick up right where we left off in our sermon review, and we'll see what he thinks faith looks like. If non-faith was, well, I knew God was out there, and then eventually I kind of decided to let God run things rather than me running things, what does faith look like? We're reviewing a sermon preached by Dr. Henry Cloud at Willow Creek Community Church in South Barrington, Illinois. It's titled Stage of Faith, No Jesus Yet, and according to our diagnostic, if Jesus isn't mentioned, you can't go on to steps two or three yet. So we'll see if Jesus does get mentioned, and how, after this.
The cross is always relevant. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Here in the second hour of the program, we'll continue a sermon review we've been doing. Sermon preached by Dr. Henry Cloud at Willow Creek Community Church on Sunday. And the sermon is titled Stages of Faith. We haven't gotten far into the stages of faith. He's talked about the first stage of faith being, oddly enough, non-faith. That's his term. And he gave his testimony, a testimony that was completely free and unencumbered by any mention of Jesus Christ. And I think if we keep listening, we'll hear what he thinks faith actually looks like. So far, it's been very generic, very vague. References to the deity, no specific references to Jesus himself, which is, as we've said, according to our diagnostic, which I don't think is unfair at all. If it's going to be Christian preaching, shouldn't it at least mention Jesus? I mean, that doesn't make it Christian preaching, but at the very least, shouldn't it mention Jesus? So we'll continue with our sermon review a little bit later in the hour. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse will be our guest. We'll talk about GOP vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan and women's issues. Then Pastor Jonathan Fisk will join us for a short movie review, The Bourne Legacy and The Expendables 2. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. We are coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. You can send us an email here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Now, remember our diagnostic. How often is Jesus mentioned? If Jesus is mentioned many times, he hasn't been mentioned at all yet, we're 8 minutes into the sermon, then you can go on to part two. Is Jesus the subject of the verbs? That is this a sermon about what Jesus has done? And then part three, what are those verbs? Is this the Jesus who merely inspires you or gives you rules for living or rules your life? Or is this the Jesus who actually suffers, dies, and rises again, all for you, the sinner, to save you? That's the diagnostic. Here's more of the sermon. I think he's going to do a little excursus because where we left off, he said he didn't have a problem with God. It was his followers that he had a problem with, and apparently he still has a problem with them.
Yeah. But this time, I had even said, I'll become one of those wackos. Just get me out of this. Nothing happened. I'll never forget that moment. I gave myself to God, and I was expecting to get zapped, you know, like they do on TV. You've done the channel surfing late at night. And I thought something was going to happen. I was going to see lightning or get zapped or have a vision or something. And nothing happened. And I'll never, ever forget that moment of the stark emptiness and blackness, because it was a literal coming to the end of my way of doing life. And if there wasn't another way, I knew this didn't work for me. So I just said something equivalent of, God, well, you know, if you're there, call me. I knew I jumped. I went back to my dorm room, and not too long, phone rings. I answer it, and it's a friend of mine, fraternity brother, and he said, I don't know what made me think of you. He said, you are the last person I would think of for this. He said, but for some reason, I keep thinking I should call you. He said, we're starting a Bible study at the fraternity house, and I wanted to invite you. I said, I'll be there. And I went. And then I entered out of a non-faith way of really thinking about life in any substantial way. And I entered into stage two, which is kind of the first phase when we jump in the boat. And there's a lot of different things you can call this, but I'm going to call it external and institutional. Meaning that we jump into the truth. And this truth is this external reality that we've never been in before. And we find for the first time that the uncertainty and the loss of meaning and the not knowing a purpose and all of that, that there really is a God. And it's really true. And there is a way to live life. And we start to learn discipline and rules.
Is there anything here that a Mormon would disagree with? I don't think so. There really is a God, and then we learn discipline and rules. So his first stage of real faith, he has non-faith as the first stage. Stage two of this of faith for him is learning the discipline and the rules, external and institutional. Finding out your purpose, finding some meaning, and you learn discipline and rules. Still no Jesus. Still, he's doing a sermon on the stages of faith. I presume it's the Christian faith he's talking about, because Willow Creek is a Christian church. And he's gotten to stage two of faith, learning discipline and the rules, which is an odd place to begin. No Jesus. Well, let's give him a chance.
I don't know why I did that. We don't learn calligraphy. We just learn discipline and rules. But what I mean by this is we learn all of the disciplines, the prayer and Bible study, and I got to go to church and all of this kind of stuff. And we learn for the first time, I'm not the one that makes up right and wrong. God has some ways and some truths, and these can help me, like Bill was saying earlier, even in my finances and even in choosing a career. And then if I've got gifts and... Oh my gosh, do you guys remember taking that step? The security that we feel. And if you've never taken that step, you just got to do this. You don't have to do the universe on your own. There is a God. Then we take a step and we find incredible, incredible, incredible truths. And I'll never forget going from lost to being found and the security of that. And we learn right from wrong and what we're for and what we're against. And the other part of this is we start to change some external things. And we start to change behaviors. And we start to change some of the ways that we've been living that we might have thought were okay, but we're finding are really destructive to me. And we just had this new place to land. I thank God for stage two. But, here's the downside of stage two, or the limitations. Have you ever known any people stuck here, where they get goofy? You can't, if you stay in stage two too long, you go from like tolerable to intolerable. Because I remember when I went, I was so excited here, and I got the truth, and I went back to my fraternity, I was going, guys, you got to come to Jesus. And, you know, everything's kind of like a lot of God talk, and there's some downsides. One of the downsides is we kind of get goofy to seekers.
So there he mentioned Jesus. Guys, you got to come to Jesus. That's oddly the first. I don't know. Is it just assumed at Willow Creek? Is all this assumed? Because I've never attended there. Is there a big sign over the preacher's head that says something about Jesus so that he doesn't have to mention them? So we got one mention of Jesus so far in his, as an example of, actually a negative example of the, when he was stuck in stage two, when he thought everything was black and white and right and wrong. And he was being goofy when he said to his fraternity brothers, guys, you got to come to Jesus. A negative example. But it is, I'll hand it to him. He has mentioned Jesus at least once, not the subject of the verbs. So diagnostic part three does not apply here. So guys, you have to come to Jesus. That would be you being the subject of the verbs for you grammarians out there.
You ever been around any Christians like this? Some of you are nudging each other. Some of you are brought by one of these people today. My wife and I moved about 12 years ago from Orange County to Los Angeles. And we had just had a new baby, and we were settling in this neighborhood, and a new couple moved in right next door to us after we had just gotten there. And so we thought, well, we'll reach out to this couple and we'll invite them over. And we had them over for dinner, and they had a new baby as well. And so it's going to be great. And I've always got, you know, outreach on my mind anyway. And so we have this dinner, and I'm asking them about their families and all that. And the woman said, well, I've got this sister that does this and this one that does this. She had like 50 sisters. And then she says, but I got this one sister that is one of those crazy Christians. You know, the wacko born-again types? I go, yeah, I know those people. She goes, you know, everything's Jesus and born-again and all this God talk and all this stuff. She says, it drives me crazy. I'm sitting there nodding, you know, note to self.
Again, he's mentioned Jesus, let's be fair. But again, a negative example of a goofy, crazy Christian who mentions Jesus. Maybe that's why they don't mention Jesus at Willow Creek so much. They don't want to be thought of as goofy or crazy Christians. Maybe that's why their preachers seem to steer clear of the subject. Who knows? All right, got a few more minutes before the break. Let's hear some more.
So we just become friends, and we're, you know, doing the new parenting thing together. And he's a financial guy, and we have a lot of business talks and play golf and all this stuff. And we're just becoming community, not too much crazy Christian talk at all. And so about 8 months later, I'm standing in the den, which you can see from the front door, and she just walks in the front door like we would do in each other's houses, and she walks in the front door, but this time it's different. I'm standing back there, and she walks in, and she sees me, and she goes, I said, what? She goes, you're one of them. I said, one of what? She said, you're one of those crazy Christians. I said, of course I am. Can't you tell? Who outed me? She goes, my sister. The crazy one I told you about. I said, what happened? She said, I was talking to her on the phone, and she said, well, tell me about your neighborhood. She said, well, there's a couple that lives next door, and we're pretty good friends. Oh, what do they do? Well, I think he's a psychologist. He might have written a book or something. I don't know. He doesn't talk about it much. And the sister said, well, what's his name? And so I told my sister your name, and she goes, praise Jesus! I have been praying for you for years. God has brought a Christian family right in your midst. Can't you see the work of the Lord?
All right, we'll take a pause there. When we come back, we'll have more of this sermon. So Jesus gets mentioned three times so far. All three examples of some crazy Christian uttering that name that preacher has yet to mention in the positive light. We'll be right back.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the logo for the Issues Etc. Journal and Weekly Bulletin insert at issuesetc.org and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org, look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo, and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
We have a special premium for first-time donors to Issues Etc. It's the new Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio mousepad. We'll send it to you for your first-time donation to Issues Etc. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also make your first-time gift by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Thanks for your support.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Pastor Miller of Trinity Lutheran Church in Bay Ridge. We preach, teach, and confess the historic Catholic faith. For a refuge from the pop spirituality and shallow preaching that swirls about in our day, come to our haven at 9020 3rd Avenue in Brooklyn. In addition to Mrs. Solano's Sunday School at 9:30, we have liturgy at 11 a.m., followed by a fellowship meal and Bible study after the service. You're invited to come and be a part of Trinity, a biblical and sacramental church. Visit trinitybayridge.org.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
There is absolutely no substitute in the church on Sunday morning for a live organist up there plying their trade at the top of their skill, leading the church in both the liturgy and the hymns. But we both know that finding a live organist is sometimes very, very difficult. Many congregations struggle through summer months, through the rest of the year without a live organist. That's why there is virtual organist. What it does is provide liturgy and service music straight from the hymnal, according, ready to order for your congregation, in addition to all the hymns there. It is operated from an iPad. It is simple. It is reliable. Anyone can use it. It's so simple. No training manual is necessary. It's also very affordable. Virtual organist, it's custom ordered to your congregation specifications, about $45 a piece, and that's about the same as paying a part-time organist Sunday to Sunday. It plays back many types of organs, both electronic and pipe, and if your organ is not compatible, they offer a version that simply plugs into your speaker system. You can find out more about Virtual Organist from churchmusicsolutions.com. It's all one word, churchmusicsolutions.com. During a sermon review, we've got about another 10 minutes in the sermon review before Dr. Jennifer Oback Morse joins us, and then Pastor Jonathan Fisk for a movie review. All right, We've got the first two stages, non-faith, and then he says external and institutional, which apparently is typified by learning the rules and learning your purpose for your life. But he says here that there comes a time in your life when the formula that you learned when you first came to faith, they just don't apply to life anymore.
We will have life experiences. Life experiences that the formulas fail. In an immature stage, and I don't mean bad, but I mean beginning stage, we learn truths. And the truths are that obedience leads to blessing. That is true. Bill said he's had 30 years of it, 40 years, however many years. And it's true, and we start to trust that, and obedience leads to blessing, and prayer changes things, and we know the truths of God, and it changes our lives, and all of this stuff. But what happens is, just like a literal child sees it kind of in black and white, we turn some of these truths into formulas, and we think, if I do it this way, then God will bless me and good things happen, and you're being faithful, and you're doing everything right, and then you have a life experience that doesn't fit the formula. You're faithful and do everything right, and a spouse goes sideways. You're faithful, you dedicate your children to God, and you do everything you can do, and then one of them goes sideways.
Now, he's talking here about the formulas. I don't know why he's talking about the stages of faith, because this doesn't sound like faith. This just sounds like principles for living. Or, I mean, the way he's described it is, you do this, and then you get blessed. You do this, and things go right. And then he says, well, then life throws you a curveball. And I would say this much. If you have, as a Christian, formulas, your theology, that can be undone by your life experiences, you've got the wrong theology. Yeah, if you have a theology of glory such as he has described, you do everything right, then everything should go right for you. That's a theology of glory. Well, that doesn't fit life. There's a reason it doesn't fit life. It's a false theology. Now, he wants you to hold on to those formulas. False formulas that aren't faith. That's not faith. That's a quid pro quo with God, isn't it? I do this and then God will repay me. If you have a formula as a Christian that doesn't fit life, your formula is wrong. Christianity is about the real life. It is about a God who doesn't wait for you to do everything right before he blesses you. In fact, he blesses you only because Christ has done everything right in your place. Let's cut to the chase on the sermon, see how he rounds it off. This is Dr. Henry Cloud at Willow Creek Community Church.
Here's the deal. God is there in each stage, and he will take you to the next one. And I'll close with this. You guys are, I've told you this, you're like my second home. And I'll be here next August. And I, you know, that's about the intervals I see you. But I think of you, and as I think of you, I'm going to be praying for you that next year, wherever you found yourself today, for you stage oneers who might be very successful looking for more or a purpose, or you might have hit bottom but you've never gone through the door, or you just know you need forgiveness, I'm going to pray that you take that step and you reach out to God, because he will catch you. And in stage two, people, if you're learning all this stuff, then learn it with fervor and learn the disciplines. But don't be a wacko Christian. And don't drive your friends away, because they might not be in a place where that works for them. But you learn the disciplines. But at some point, you're going to have to begin to see how these grays, it's not black and white, and there's these grays and complexities and traumas that don't fit into the formulas. You're going to have to take a step of faith to take God into those areas of struggle in your life. And you're going to have to keep walking even when it doesn't work. And I implore you, go into the desert, grab somebody's hand, grab God's hand, but don't go back. Keep going through the desert, because what you're going to find, and I will pray for you there, and what you're going to find is that you're going to find God is there and He is true. And for those of you who have had this experience where you trust Him now with everything, I will pray for you that now that you know that He's there, then let that do to you what it did to the disciples. It caused them to go further into the world and not be afraid, because they knew that as they reached out with the love of God, that God would empower them. And I will pray that for you and for this church. God bless you guys. Thanks for having me.
I think this is why we don't let psychologists preach. I mean, this was, they often talk in kind of derogatory terms about psychobabble. You know, modern Christian preaching being a lot of psychobabble. Enough said. Very generic references to God, to the deity, even to things as specific as Christian conversion, a testimony with no Jesus, the only time Jesus is mentioned, which were three times he's mentioned, coming out, the name as an exclamation coming out of the mouth of a crazy Christian. Don't be one of those. Don't be one of those, by all means. And a sermon that was thoroughly and totally and completely about the Christian, and thoroughly and totally and completely not about the Christ. That's what I mean when I talk about preaching the Christian rather than the Christ. Preaching the Christian doesn't save anybody. It may amuse you. It may cause you a sense of camaraderie with the preacher or with one another. The Christian doesn't save. Only Christ does. So at one of the most heralded and famous churches in the United States, still to this day, Willow Creek, a sermon preached that didn't require Jesus in any shape, matter, or form. A generic deity? Perhaps. He's there. He's kind of helping you. He's empowering you. He's moving you from stage to stage of faith. Faith in what? Faith in whom? Who knows? Folks, if you appreciate our sermon reviews, please consider making a tax-deductible gift to support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. You can contribute by check, make a check payable to Issues, etc. Send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. The address again, LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a secure online donation at our website, issuesetc.org. No gift is too small, and for first-time donors, we're going to thank you by sending you the new Issues, Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio mousepad for their first-time gift to Issues, Etc. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind during the challenging summer months. When we come back, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse will be our guest from the Ruth Institute. A lot has been said, a lot of ink has been spilled, a lot of speculation has been made about Paul Ryan, the GOP vice presidential candidate. One of the questions that I think many voters have on their minds is, what about women's issues? I think part of the reason he was chosen, being a Roman Catholic candidate there, was to bring some clarity to the Romney-Ryan ticket on women's issues. We'll see what Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse has to say about that. Then we'll do a little movie review with Pastor Jonathan Fisk, host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting. The two movies we're reviewing in the latter part of Issues, Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon, August the 22nd, The Bourne Legacy and The Expendables 2, with Pastor Jonathan Fisk. Stay tuned.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Well, Justin has completed his summer work at Sylvan Learning Center in Edwardsville. His reading comprehension has improved more than 3 grade levels, and his vocabulary has increased almost an entire grade level. Sylvan Learning Center of Edwardsville has a 6-week back-to-school boot camp. Their phone number, 618-656-0500, 618-656-0500. Emily has 4 weeks left at Sylvan. A report on her progress next time.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Federal mandates and abortion.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
By now, you've read the headlines and heard the news. The federal government is mandating that all women receive free contraceptives, including drugs that cause early abortions. But despite what abortion advocates want to argue, pregnancy is not a disease, and chemical abortions are not medicine. Those most affected, mainly faith-based organizations who oppose birth control and or abortion, are not standing still as the government violates their religious freedom by requiring them to provide such. Universities, hospitals, and other institutions, both Catholic and Protestant, have filed lawsuits to challenge the mandates.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.